Welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast, the global mini golf podcast. Hear from some of the best players in the sport. Look ahead to some of the biggest tournaments and have a chance to win some amazing prizes. And now your hosts, Andrew Edmonds and Simon Brown.
Hello and welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Edmonds. Welcome, one and all, and thank you so much for joining us. And with me, as always, is my good friend and co-host. You're never going to believe it. It's Simon Brown. Hello, Simon.
Hello, and as always, it's good to be back.
Well, it's good to have you back and be talking to you. You've just come off the mini golf pitch, of course. My season hasn't started yet, but yours has.
Yes, indeed. Yes, about the planet, I guess, everything's starting to start up for 2023. But outside of your Czech tournaments and my UK tournaments, there's been some fascinating things happened in February about the planet, which I think is what we're going to take a look at today.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got, let me tell you, just the perfect person to be discussing February with, and we're going to introduce him in a second. Just before we do that, we just have time for my favourite part of the show, which is where we thank our Patreon supporters for their help in allowing us to do this podcast. So thank you very much, Sebi Kukielka, champion of the podcast. And if you listening would like to support the podcast, then you can do so at patreon.com/54problems, and you can find that link as well through our Facebook page, 54 Problems. Okay, so joining us to help us recap the month of February, we have a person that had an absolutely outstanding February, and we're going to talk all about that in a second. Please welcome to the 54 Problems podcast, proud Team USA member and the winner of the inaugural World Putting League, Gary Hester. Hello, Gary.
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Still on cloud nine from that historic win. First time ever, you know, a putting event was taped and shown live from start to finish worldwide, you know, on live stream, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome to watch and follow along at home. It was really exciting. We're going to talk about it and we'll get into all of that in tournament talk later. But for now, thank you so much for joining us to share your thoughts with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
In mini golf news, Patrick Sheridan, our cousin from across the pond, he's received a letter from the USPMGA. Basically, it just said, stop bad-mouthing us and our organization. Otherwise, you won't be part of our organization anymore. Now, we're not going to talk about that too much. Firstly, because we don't have as much context as Pat does, but also is covered in great detail in the podcast episode called February Tournament and the Letter. So if you're interested in that, go listen to that episode. Pat reads out the letter and shares his thoughts on it. I suppose I'll just say a couple of things. First of all, we're very lucky to know Pat now. I'd say that we're friends. We met through doing podcasts and that kind of thing. And I'm absolutely certain that Pat only ever has the best interest of the sport in his mind. So when he gives comments and when he shares his thoughts on the podcast, and he puts so much effort into what he does in sharing content, it's only ever for the benefit of the sport. He doesn't have any other intentions than that. So personally, I think it's a little bit rich, him receiving this letter. That's the first thing that I'll say. Second thing I'll say is that Simon and I, all the time on this podcast, we discuss various associations, federations. We talk about what the BMGA is doing a lot. We say good things. We say some places where they can improve. Same for the Czech Federation. We've never received anything even like this. We've never received anything to ask us to change what we're saying or to stop what we're saying as well. So I think that puts the letter that Patrick received, that makes it even more extreme that this organization would do something like that. Simon, what do you think?
I think it makes us appreciate the freedom of speech that we're afforded within mini golf and the platform compared to what our US friends have been afforded. I think that makes me appreciate that.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, sometimes we say things, good and bad, and it's not until I meet up with members of the mini golf community that I see how it's perceived. But it's always taken lightly and as an opinion. For that to infringe on the US side of things in, you know, potential participation in having freedom to talk about the game. We all want the game to be considered as a sport and not a game.
Yeah.
And for it to be that, it has to be open to criticism. And I feel for Pat. He's put in a position that he talks from hoping to develop the game, and then he's made to feel like he shouldn't. So it's interesting. And I wouldn't want to say too much apart from listen to podcast. Sure. It's it's a great jumping off point, fascinating first episode if you haven't given it a go. I think we'll link that up in the show notes. And then you can have a look at that if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. It's interesting what you say, that we all want the sport to be perceived as a sport and not a game. And Pat is right up there at the top of people helping the sport to become that and to give it that exposure and to make really good content and to share things like scores and live streaming and all of this, all of these things that we need to do to get that engagement and to get people thinking of mini golf like a sport. So
if you don't mind, let me inject.
Yeah, Gary, go ahead.
I'm very close to the situation as far as, you know, I live 25 minutes from the home course here at the Rumble. And I am aware of what happened, and I don't want to say a whole lot about it. It's kind of a, the way I look at it, we're a putting family. You know, that's the way we look at it worldwide, really, but especially here in the States. I figure all these are family members. And as family members, sometimes, as you know, we argue, you know, we don't always get along. And I think that's what's happening between Pat and Bob. And, you know, I'm close to both the guys. I'm probably closer to Bob since I live here and I talk to him frequently. And, you know, he's been great for the USPNGA since he formed it back in, I guess, 1997. Hopefully they can get this thing worked out between them and not become just gigantic riff. But I just feel like it's just right now, obviously we're a putting family. I love all the guys. But, you know, at times, you know, we do argue and we do fight a little bit. So I'm hoping we can get through this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Gary, for your thoughts. And we'll leave it there. Like we said, the podcast episode has more information on that. So to get into the meat of the episode then, this is where we look at the important, interesting tournaments that have happened over the last month. This is Tournament Talk.
Tournament Talk.
So, Simon, you're going to kick us off. Where are you taking us?
I am taking us down under to the Oceania Mini Golf Open in New South Wales, Australia at Sporty's Baruga. I hope I said that correctly. On the 11th and 12th of February. So, this, I can't believe some of the money that they play for down under. This always gets me in the big. You know, we see the same names at the top. And yeah, some of the prizes, fantastic. So this is a major event down there. And I was won by somebody that I think we have mentioned in the podcast before, and somebody that's coming out to Hastings to play in the Crazies this summer. Hopefully we'll hear them. And that was Josh Miles. It is Josh's first major title, and he won with 6 under par and took home $3,000.
Wow.
That's just over £2,500.
That'll pay for his trip to Hastings. very nicely, I imagine.
But yeah, fantastic performance by Josh. He held off, just by one shot, held off Stephen Samuelson. That's a new name to me. He took home £1,700, $2,000. And in third place, friend of the podcast, Alan Tox, mm-hmm. who has been a guest before, who took home $1,000. Yeah, the scores, well, when you think Josh won by one shot, but he equaled the course record in the last round to do that.
Wow.
So fantastic composure to take a first major. A couple of other shout-outs from that event would be Jake Hunt, who was the winner of the youth category for the second year consecutively. He also finished tied 10th overall. So hopefully some young talent coming through in Australia. And then after the major was over, they do a match play. And that was won by Nathan Lamplough. That's a name we see about sort of on Facebook in these lists. So obviously got a bit of game in him as well. And he held off Alan Cox in second. So yeah, fantastic to see big money events down in Australia that I think we miss sometimes. I'd love to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations to all those players. And congratulations to Josh. We will we'll see you in Hastings over the summer. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think Josh is somebody we should look to get on the podcast sometimes. He seems a big character.
Yeah. So over the 20th and 21st of February was the $15,000 Fort Myers stroke play event. This is one of the Pop Stroke Tour events. So the final results then, after three rounds of traditional stroke play, the winner, congratulations, Chris Johnson, was 13 under par after three rounds. Second was yourself, Gary, finishing on minus 11, and that's with only one mistake. So only one lane where you didn't score a two-run ace. And third,
do you want to hear what happened on that particular lane?
What happened?
It was the first round. And, and you know, when you come out of the gate, you know, you want to get a good start and your nerves are there a little bit. And hole six was a very, very tough hole. It's uphill to the hole. And once it got to the hole, it levels out with just a small area behind it. And if you hit it too hard, it would get up the hill and come back by the hole. Well, I hit a very good putt, and this thing lit and stayed 8 inches behind the hole.
Okay.
So I basically had an 8-inch tap in. Well, occasionally, and they did come out and try to adjust it after that. You have a hole where it's not quite as deep as it should be, or lined up a little differently. This had a little copper metal lip at the top. And it tipped the metal tip, fell down in a hole at such an awkward angle. It went to the bottom of the cup. It popped out.
Oh, no.
Rolled down the 15-foot hill.
Oh, no.
Slid around the little mound. I had to lay up for that four. And that was the only mistake of the tournament. That was my only over par lane of the tournament. Now, granted, it was the first round. I could have played differently. I could have played better, could have played worse. It may have got me fired up because I got the strokes back very quickly. So the fact that I lost the tournament by two strokes, I can't say that did it, but that was the same margin of where I lost by two strokes. So I choose to look at it as maybe it fired me up and it got me the second, you know.
I don't know if you could even call that a mistake, honestly.
No, it wasn't. It was a little hard to swallow when it first happened, but I was able to work through it, thankfully, and continued to play well the rest of the rounds.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of a bounce out. Okay, sometimes you see bounce outs and they stop right next to the hole and you go, okay, I've lost a stroke.
Right.
I don't think I've ever heard of a bounce out and then rolling down a hill and having to lay
off. That was only because the front edge of the hole was where the hill was at. And once it got out of the hole, it was off and running. And I just stood there with this look on my face like, really? It's going down the field after I tapped it in? It was tough to swallow.
Sure. Day. I think I know some players that would have walked off when that happened.
Yeah, I won't say it didn't cross my mind. But it was too early. It was just the sixth hole of the tournament. I had a long way to go.
Yeah.
So, and thankfully, I aced it the last round, which was kind of nice, you know.
Yeah, retribution. Okay.
Yes.
And in third place was Brian Johnson with 10 under par. So how did you find this tournament? One thing that strikes me is there was a bit of a gulf between the top four or five players on the leaderboard for three rounds. Yeah, the results were actually quite spread out. How did you find it?
Well, I think a lot of the top people practiced in the conditions that we were going to play the tournament. And a lot of the people didn't take in consideration these pop stroke courses. And it's not just this one, it's everyone we've played. I've never seen a carpet change with the temperature and heat as these pop stroke courses. And it becomes a challenge if we're playing from daylight to sundown or from heat to cool. And we had learned in Sarasota already and in Orlando earlier this year, all these courses were going to be the same way. This carpet they have, and we love it. It's a very true running carpet. Don't get me wrong. We love the carpet, but it's like, you know, it's a different skill set to play it in the daytime to nighttime. I'm talking major difference, not a little difference. I've never seen a difference this substantial. And I think your top players in this tournament, if I look through the names, most of these guys were there at night with us seeing this change. And I think a lot of the people, they got to practice in the daytime, they went home and ate dinner, and they didn't come back and get these nighttime conditions. And it made a difference. It made a big difference.
So in terms of the future then of Pop Stroke, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on it, because they've done a few things recently. This Fort Myers was meant to be a high roller event as well, but that was cancelled, at least from Fort Myers. They've changed their tournament schedule a little bit, and I know some people are concerned about playing tournaments over the summer with the heat and things like that. What are you thinking about the future of Pop Stroke, and is there anything that you think that they need to do or they need to look at?
Well, I think, you know, they're in their growing stage pretty much. Yeah. Now, the gentleman running it, I call him G-Man because I'm terrible with pronunciation of his last name.
Guillaume Ballon.
Yeah. He's talking to the players. He's trying to make things work. He's getting ideas from the guys to see, you know, like I said, we started with a schedule that had so many tournaments between January and May, and it was actually top heavy.
Yeah.
And so we told him that we just couldn't travel, especially the guys working. You can't get off that much, that many tournaments that quick when they're playing other schedules as well. So he spread it out. He dropped a few. Obviously, we're going to have one in Houston in July, which should be an oven. But but he's trying to make things work for everyone. We didn't have a whole lot of high rollers in Fort Myers because we didn't have the participation. And so he dropped the amount of the high rollers a little bit. He asked everybody, he sent us all emails. Hey, what do you think about this? He got feedback. So he's just not making these decisions without any feedback. And it's a good thing to work with us to see what we like, what will work. So this program can grow. And that's what we need it to do, is grow, because these courses are great. You know, all the sponsorship that was there for the Tour Championship last year, from the energy drink to TaylorMade, the different ones that were there, that really helps promote. It helps get money into the tournaments to make them worthwhile. You know, it was great seeing Hans and Lochner and all the guys come over here and play. And we look forward to seeing them again. And I know the high roller was a big thing for them. They enjoyed that. And I know that's a big draw. So he realizes that, and he's trying to put those back in.
Yeah, I think if I won $20,000, I would have enjoyed it as well.
Exactly.
Simon, anything else to say on Popstroke before we move on to the WPL?
I just find it fascinating to watch it sort of find its feet.
Mm.
It's obvious that there's been a lot of feedback taken, which is positive, and hopefully they can find a pattern, you know, that suits participation, that suits timing for tournaments, and I'd love to see it settle down and they have a calendar and a formula that actually is a success, because it's clear that the courses are well received and everybody that's played in it has nothing but positives to say. So, and I think Gary's another example of that today.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And what we've heard from Gary and we've heard from the Swedish team as well about, you know, they love they love the felt, they love the surface, but it changes a huge amount throughout the day. We've heard that consistently from everyone we talked about, and I think that adds a fantastic challenge. Yeah, you're right, it'd be great to see it when it settles down, but they're trying something new. This is all part of the process. It's exciting to see where it's gonna lead. Okay, so 1 week after Fort Myers was the first World Putting League event in collaboration with the USPMGA. This was a really interesting one to me, because we heard the announcement of the World Putting League that they would be bringing this gambling where each player would have odds assigned to them, and you could gamble on the outcome of the tournaments, you could gamble on individual players, and there was this promise of live streaming. And then it went completely quiet and we didn't seem to hear anything for months. And then all of a sudden things moved very, very quickly, and you had these odds. And if you're in the right states in the US, you could gamble. And the live streaming was absolutely fantastic to watch from home. It was amazing. Gary, you were part of this competition. Did what I just described there, because that was how I sort of followed along with things, that there was this early announcement and then everything went quiet for a bit, and then it just all of a sudden turned into this amazing event. Did that kind of mirror the experience that you went through as a player?
It did. You know, we had a lot of early excitement and then it did go quiet. But once again, since I am here close to the courses, I was getting a little more information along than maybe some of the rest of the people were getting. And it was a process. Whenever they decided, they had to get bids for the production crew. So there was that time being spent. They had to make sure that you had one of the betting sites up and going and ready to take us in. So they did get a little quiet to get all the ducks in a row. But once the ducks did get in a row, and it happened very quickly, like you said, things moved at a pretty good pace, and information was, at least to us, was flowing very quickly.
Yeah, so before we talk about the format of the tournament and the scores, just the experience of watching the live stream along from home. And they've made a highlights reel as well, and we can share the highlights reel in the show notes. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was almost of the quality of something you'd see like on the PGA Tour. It wasn't too dissimilar. And this goes back to what Simon and myself were talking about earlier, thinking of mini golf as a proper sport. I think this is really going to help. I think in terms of the live stream, they have all of the elements there. They had the live scoring, they had graphics on the screen, they had commentators, they had multiple camera angles. I think with a little bit of refinement, this could be something quite special, hopefully. That was the impression I got watching along from home. Simon, I know you were watching along from home as well. What did you think?
Yeah, so I stayed up until what must have been about 2 a.m. UK time. I was exhausted, but it was a fascinating watch. We're not used to having this, certainly not live. Yeah. And I thought the additional element of the commentary added a lot. Big shout out to Tom Loftus from podcast for that. He was fantastic.
He was.
That was yes to have as a commentator. And yeah, it's just, it excited me, because I was watching people that, to me, I see, well, I was going to say on a level with us, maybe a slightly higher level, But, you know, they do what we do. And this was a full production to watch.
Yeah.
I thought it must be a fascinating element if you were in the US and you could have bet on it. Did either of you happen to know what the odds for Gary to win was? I take it you would have been one of the slight outsiders.
I was one of the outsiders for sure. I think I was a plus 550 as part of the field, actually. I was okay. Part of the field. They had like, I think, five or six favorites, and then the rest was the field. So I was the beginning of the field, so to speak. So if you bet the field and got me, you got your win. But as far as the production, I'll be honest with you, it was exceeded my expectations because yeah. The gentleman who got the bid, he does the telecast for like long drives and different things. And he was there multiple days in advance and going over the sight lines because you've probably never been to the Rumble, but it is an extremely difficult course to have sight lines. You have this gigantic volcano mm-hmm. in the middle of the course. You have palm trees everywhere. You have bridges. You have up and down changes of elevation. And so he was fighting. So some of the cameras, were wireless. So he was fighting for sight lines to keep the wireless connections strong. One of the cameras, I think, maybe two, just one, I think, actually had a hard connection that they drug the lines around.
Right.
The rest of them were wireless.
Yeah.
And so some of the parts with the streaming issues was the sight lines, I believe. And they were working hard to make it as clean as possible. And it was a learning experience for them as well.
Sure.
And especially, if they do it again, if they use this same production crew, they'll hopefully learn from their mistakes. I know the Wi-Fi was going in and out occasionally. I think all that stuff will be rectified if they do it again. But they worked hard. You could tell they worked mm-hmm. hard. There was a production tent off to the side. There was more people involved with the production than actually out on the course. They were, and you had Brian Katrick there, which is a PGA Tour radio host. And mm-hmm. that helped with the broadcast. And he had played the course, although some of his information was a little dated because he hadn't played it since the new carpet down. Right. And the shots had changed a little bit, but we'll give him a pass on that. But it was great to have a good voice like Brian Katrick there doing the commentary. And on a side note, that was one tall professional volleyball player doing the interviews.
Cass yes, Brown. She was, wasn't she? Yes.
She's 6'5". And she was just absolutely great. She was great.
I guess the future success or failure of these tournaments will depend on if people actually bet on it, if money was laid. I wonder who has access to those figures, to what extent that information will ever be out there.
I'm hoping we hear something. I do know that the future of these events was solely based on how well this is received.
Sure.
Whether or not another organization like DraftKings is looking at it, if DraftKings picks it up, that would be huge. And I do know, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, I think the contract was signed with the USPMGA for 7 events. So I guess the first 7, if they do have more events, would be a USPMGA course, with either the mm-hmm. Rumble or the Pineapple or one of the courses we play the U.S. Open on this year, since we were going to be in Texas, but that course pulled out last year. And so by default, we came back to the one of the home courses here at the Pineapple to play the U.S. Open this year. But yes, it's very much dependent upon how well it was received and how it looks. I'm sure they're putting together a package program to show this to other sporting events. And we're still waiting for other states to come on board to accept this, where people can place wagers.
Yes. So on the subject of the wagering, have you heard anything? Because I haven't heard anything. Have you heard any stories from people who participated, whether they had successful or unsuccessful wages? Have you heard anything at all?
Yes, I have, actually. I was watching the bottom feed of the Hammers broadcast.
Okay.
And I haven't had a chance to look at all of it, but I was scrolling about on the bottom and somebody won $350 on me. I know that.
Oh, okay.
They're like, hey, I just won $350 on this guy. And I was thinking, hey, I'm that guy. That's pretty cool.
How does that feel? Because that is an experience I mean, most of us people listening, they never would have felt anything like that. I'm guessing it's your first time experiencing someone bet on you.
It's odd to think that some random person who didn't know me from Adam won money on me. And granted, he may have just picked the field and I was the lucky one. But I do understand. I mean, somebody said they picked me in the final four. So I don't know who that was, but I was just reading some of the comments on the bottom of Hammer's site there, which was pretty cool to see. You know, people were rooting for me because they had bet on me, which was that's different, that's unique. And Brock Gillespie from the National Putting Tour. He put out a YouTube thank you to me, which I appreciated. And he was saying he was in California and was unable to bet, but he had seen me at Pop Stroke and he knew I'd played well in Fort Myers. And he said he would have picked me if he had had an opportunity, which was kind of cool.
Yeah. So onto the tournament itself, then, can you talk us through the format? Because it was an interesting format. I think it led itself to the live streaming very well, I have to say as well. Do you want to walk through the format in terms of what happened on the first day and the second day and how you felt about the format?
Well, the format was they would take the top eight scores. You play two rounds on the first day.
Yeah.
And the top eight scores would qualify in head-to-head medal match play, not by hole, but medal match play the following day head-to-head.
What do you mean? What do you mean medal match play?
All right. The traditional match play that we've seen over the years, you know, I played putt-putt most of my life growing up.
Sure, by hole. Yeah.
And if you watch the Tournament of Champion programs, every match play is played by hole. In other words, if you have a three on the hole, the other guy gets a one, he only wins a hole. He doesn't win.
Sure.
It's not a two-stroke swing. Uh-huh. This format was completely different. If you took a three on a hole, and it happened with Rick Alessi in my first match, he took a three on hole two and I aced it. So I picked up two strokes there.
So, right.
So it was by medal play elimination. So we both played against each other as far as we played in the same twosome, but the low score advanced. It wasn't by hole. It wasn't matching by hole. It was matching by low score of the round, which was unique. I've never played in that type of match play format before. And I'll be honest with you, it was fun. I mean, I enjoyed it. Now, obviously, I enjoyed it when you win, but I enjoyed it regardless. It was just a different format.
Absolutely. So after the first day cut into eight players and then head to heads, as you say, on the second day, after those three rounds, you were 5 under par, beating Matt McCaslin 3 under par in the final round. So congratulations, the first ever winner of a World Putting League event, and no one can ever take that away
Thank you very much. It was an extremely humbling experience. I had so many of my friends there, and you know, I'm going to back up to the final eight. You know, I was the second seed, and that was extremely important because me and Newport tied for the second seed. So we went out into it ended up being three holes. We went out to a sudden death playoff that ended on the third hole, and had I lost, I would have played Olivia,
right?
Which you know is a tough out. She is a great player. Love her to death. We're great friends, and I don't know. You know, her and Newport played each other, and Newport, you know, eliminated her, and then Newport got Matt. Another part that was different of the format was we reseeded every round. In other words, I was the second seed after the first day, but after the first round, I dropped to the third seed, I believe.
That's interesting. Okay.
It is. It is. And then I got Joey Grable, which is a great guy. I've had many close matches with him. He beat me in the Masters 1 year down the stretch. He beat me in the Tennessee Open 1 year down the stretch. I've had a lot of close matches with him, and he's a tough competitor, and he's tough to beat. And I beat him by one. And interesting enough, I didn't even realize this until the tournament was over. I was up after the first hole in all three matches and was never tied. The only time I was tied was on hole 17 when Joey putted it before I did. But by the time we left 17, I was still up. But I led all three matches from start to finish, starting on hole one. I got one stroke up on hole one, all three matches, which was really surprising when I thought back on it. So, but yeah, the seeding was very important. The whole thing would have changed. I would have had Olivia, who knows, she could have beat me. Sure. I could have beat her, but, you know, it would have changed all the brackets quite a bit, actually. So it all worked out for me. And like I said, you know, I've had so many closes, so many heartbreaks. And these guys, I love them to death. They have supported me. And I've never seen so much love and support when that last putt went in. And I won the tournament. Yeah. And especially Olivia. She's a good gal. She hugged my neck, and we hugged for the longest time. We whispered each other. You know, she beat me in the U.S. Open last year. I had a one-stroke lead going into 15, and we both nicked the wall, the exact same wall. Mine goes over into death, and I take a three, and hers makes this odd kick up the hill, turns completely the opposite direction, and goes in the hole. And so she does that to beat me for the tournament.
Yeah.
That was a tough one. That was a tough one. And she even apologized for that. She's a great friend, great competitor. And I know she just fell in love with the U.S. the year she traveled over here. And now she's living in Houston with Wade. And so we see her a lot more. But the love and support from these guys and everyone has been just overwhelming. And to finally get over the hump, get the monkey off my back, so to speak, and win a big tournament on a course that has not been as kind to me in the past as I would have liked.
Well, look, Gary, congratulations. I'm so happy for you, and I'm so happy to hear about all of the support you received as well on the final hole. That brings us back to your comment about it being a mini golf family. Simon, any final things to say about the World Putting League?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating to have the live footage and to start to talk about betting. I mean, that's something that had been mentioned before in the UK that we would like to see for the crazies in the summer. And I think it's great that somebody out there in the US has went and made this happen.
Yeah.
If that's the thing that kicks off and funds having live footage online so people can watch it, I think that's going to be potentially one of the biggest drivers of the sport going forward. And massive well done to Gary for a fantastic February. I don't think there's anybody that's placed so highly in two massive events in 1 month. Certainly not in this year so far. So fantastic. Well done.
Just quickly then, you have been putting for such a long time. With now you're looking at the landscape of mini golf, you're seeing things like Pop Stroke, the World Putting League, and who knows what else might be around the corner as well. Do you think we're entering a renaissance of mini golf? Do you think it's just on the edge of where it needs to be in terms of getting public attention, engagement? Can you feel that happening, or have you seen this thing before, so maybe you're a bit wary of it?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I think this is one of our best opportunities we've had in a long time, if not the best. Obviously, you know, when I started putting, putt-putt was king in the States. And oddly enough, you know, I played the Saturday morning tournaments like all kids did when you're a little kid. But then they built an Arnold Palmer putting course on my end of town, and I switched and played Arnold Palmer as an amateur.
Yeah.
And, you know, Arnold Palmer courses were, you know, a little different than the putt-putts. And I thought that was going to be the way to go. And then Arnold dropped the franchises in 73 or 74. And a lot of the courses are still around. But and then putt-putt became out. You know, they had their Tournament of Champions series. And then they had one of the longest running sports syndicated programs with the putting series. Yeah. And then it just, you know, Don Clayton, the founder, died. And the leadership after that wasn't the same. And it just like died on the vine. Nobody took the ball and kept running with it. Uh-huh. And then, but yes, we have this rebirth and this regrowth. And I thank Bob Detweiler for making his pitch in the 1990s and getting the USPMGA started, for his, all his efforts. I mean, the man really tries to promote it. If you're around and he gets excited talking about mini golf, does he make mistakes? We all make mistakes, you know? But you know, it's been a learning process for him, for us. And now we got Pop Stroke. And I think with Pop Stroke, with Tiger Woods' name as a designer of these courses, being attached to these courses, and the publicity we got last year with the TV, with Golf Channel picking it up and running that program, Bally Sports ran the same show. We got publicities. These courses are getting an immense amount of public play. We go to these courses, it's nearly impossible to practice because they are packed from day from morning till night, which is great for the game with all this new blood, because we as we know, we need new blood, especially in the States. We have lost so much of our young blood, you know, with video games. There's so much to distract the kids. I'm hoping this will be a rebirth. We need new blood, because the old putters are quite frankly getting old. I'm getting old. But yes, I think this has been our best opportunity. And Gillespie said something the other day in his YouTube. He says, we got these organizations making these leaps forward. Maybe we should think about somehow getting us all under the same umbrella. And, you know, having, you know, major championships like you know, like you have the US Open, is handled by one part of the organization, the PGA Championships handled by them. Maybe we can, you know, try to, like you said, make it, get us all under an umbrella. It may be a while, it may not happen, but that may be the best, instead of, you know, like, you know, the AFC and the NFC, when the two football giants finally got together, it made NFL football better.
Sure.
Maybe we need to get some of these new giants of mini golf together. It might make the whole sport better, instead of having, you know, all these arms and legs here and there. But yes, I think this is a great opportunity for mini golf. I think we have a chance for growth. We got it out there. It's been seen between Pop Stroke and this WPL. We got to take the ball and run with it while it's out there. We can't let it die.
Awesome. That's a great way to finish. Listen, Gary, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great to talk to you. You've given us some great insight into those two big American tournaments this month. Huge congratulations. Have you enjoyed your time on the 54 Problems podcast?
Absolutely. I certainly appreciate you guys inviting me. It's been a blast. And I wish you well. I wish all the putting world well. And I hope to see y'all soon, maybe. Seve's been coming over to see us.
Yeah,
I actually played with Seve.
He told me,
He's a little short fella.
All right, with that then, the only thing left to say is goodbye from Simon.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Gary.
Goodbye. Enjoyed it.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.